I'd like to welcome you back to the show. It's always our pleasure, honor, and opportunity to learn when we have Ed Ring on the show. He's a co-founder of the California Policy Center. He served as its first president. He's a prolific writer, political and financial analyst extraordinaire. His writings have been in all the major publications across the land. He's got an undergraduate degree from UC Davis and an MBA in finance from USC. Ed, welcome back to the show.
Thank you very much, Andy.
Well, I'll tell you, I haven't made it all the way through your tome on the homeless industrial complex and solutions. I'm about two-thirds of the way there. But my thoughts were, I wish we could make every politician in California have to do a book report on this thing of what did they learn, because they've certainly made a mess of things.
Yeah, this is what the American greatness refers to as a long read. And we published it as well as an actual study with the California Policy Center. So thank you for wading through most of it. Anyway.
Oh, well, I'm going to read it all, because I've already every time I have you on the show, I write an op-ed about it and I use it in speeches. I haven't forgotten the abundance choice. I think that was just eye-opening in its simplicity. It was simple but profound. And this issue of the homeless, that we've got a whole group of people that are making a living off of the homeless, and nobody is solving the issue problem.
It comes back, you know, that's interesting you would mention that article, because we are always in most of these policy, well, we're usually facing a choice between abundance and scarcity, and it's a political choice. And when you choose scarcity, you make everything cost more, and you don't solve as many problems. And we have a kind of a situation like that with the homeless. In California, the choice we've made is to pursue solutions to the homeless crisis that are ridiculously expensive. And there are ways to fix that. And unless we fix that, we're never going to solve the homeless crisis.
So one of the biggest eye-openers here that I had no idea about is, depending on how you define homelessness, in some ways, New York solved that problem. Even though they have the most homeless in the country, they also have the most homeless shelters. And to me, it's like, I don't know, you know, if you don't own a home or you don't rent a home, are you homeless if, in fact, you have a bed and to sleep in every night and you have three square meals a day?
New York has an advantage in that they were coping with homelessness a long time ago during the Great Depression. The city of New York hasn't, you know, grown in the last 30 years as much as, or 40 years, let's say, as Los Angeles has. Los Angeles' homeless problem is recent, so they've had less time to develop a homeless infrastructure. That's kind of an excuse, but it is important to mention that. The other thing they do in New York City, though, as you say, they have more what you call sheltered homeless versus homeless who are truly out on the street or camping or in places where they're not, where they don't have meals, they're not protected from the weather and so forth. The unsheltered homeless in New York City are only 5%, whereas the unsheltered homeless in California, it's more than half of the homeless population. So that's a big difference, and it's, again, if we can't accept that how we shelter homeless people doesn't have to cost, you know, $50,000 per shelter bed or $400,000 per, you know, a basic apartment, the so-called permanent supportive housing that's required by law. If we're going to spend that much, we're never going to solve the problem, and we do have a lot more unsheltered homeless. We have a lot of catching up to do compared to New York City.
And let's focus on this, because this is what they keep wanting to say. We got to throw a house at them. We got to throw an apartment at them. We have to throw some permanent housing at them versus New York's temporary shelter approach.
Well, that's right. And you have to wonder why there hasn't been aggressive litigation to sort of counter some of the rulings that have come along. Because in I think it was 2006, Jones versus the City of L.A., the Ninth Circuit ruled that you couldn't remove a homeless person from the street, you know, as long as they weren't blocking a sidewalk or a road. You couldn't take them out of a public place unless you could provide them, quote, permanent supportive housing. And what happened since that ruling is there's been subsequent lawsuits by plaintiff attorneys. A lot of them are freelancers. Some of them work for nonprofit organizations. And they've managed to get subsequent rulings that continue to kind of upsell what it is that constitutes permanent supportive housing. And this has to be challenged. It's possible, obviously, to shelter a homeless person without having to spend $50,000 per shelter bed. And that's the low number in many cases. I could give you examples to show how when you take into account how much they're paying to acquire the site and build the structure and create all the amenities, it comes out to $50,000 per bed. And that's crazy.
Well, it really is. And, you know, what's always drove me crazy is I know doctors and lawyers that can't afford to live in Santa Barbara, but they think they can make it affordable for the homeless to live in Santa Barbara.
Well, that's right. There has to be a set of principles that underlie what kind of shelter you can create. And one of those principles should be that an apartment or a shelter, whatever it is you're providing, shouldn't be better than what people who are actually working and paying for an apartment are. You know, they're spending all of their time barely making ends meet, barely affording rent, and living in places that are worse than the so-called permanent supportive housing that's being constructed in Los Angeles. I think the cheapest example we could find was $280,000 for a one-bedroom apartment. Most of the examples we looked at, there was around $400,000. In the rest of the United States, the average cost for an apartment unit for construction is $65,000. And yet you've got $400,000 that it's costing with this coalition of nonprofit organizations and developers that are coming together to put together, and they market this like it's a wonderful thing they're doing, and it is wonderful to create housing, but you've got to have some principles that establish what we're going to pay for isn't going to be better than what people who work have to pay for out of their wages.
Yeah, it's crazy. And you've, like I said, you always turn the light bulb on for me. And I try to do this for a living, but I'm fuddling around in the dark here trying to look at the big picture. You're a wealth of resource, Ed. We're going to come back to you after this break. Ed Ring, California Policy Center. Again, this report, folks, every decision maker and every community leader needs to read it. It's called California's Homeless Industrial Complex Causes and Solutions, and it's published at California Political Review. You're listening to The Andy Caldwell Show. Stay tuned. I'd like to welcome you back to the show. My guest, Ed Ring, co-founder of the California Policy Center. He has written a phenomenal report called California's Homeless Industrial Complex Causes and Solutions. It is well worth the read. It should be mandatory for every elected official and city and county manager in the state. And also all the people that want to address this problem, because it lays it out in a comprehensive manner. Ed, here's one of the first things, and again, this is just, you know, surfacey stuff, but I do believe it goes deep in some ways. I know that there's legitimate poor. I know there's working poor people that can't afford a place to live in California, and or people that had cancer and they lost their house or divorce or what have you. And those people, I want to see them helped first. But so many of the people that are on the streets are either drug addicts, alcoholics, mentally ill, or all three, dual or triple diagnosed. And those people, it's like, well, I don't want to just keep throwing money at them. and until they're willing to do what it takes, and usually that means some measure of suffering, to start making right choices in their lives.
Well, that's right. And one of the people that we talked to preparing this operated a homeless shelter down in San Diego that has better success than average. He divided homeless people. They kind of did an assessment and came up with three categories. They call it the cannots, the have-nots, and the will-nots. The cannots are people who are mentally ill or disabled. They estimate that's about 15% of the homeless. And then the have-nots and the will-nots, the have-nots are who you just described, people down on their luck. They could succeed with, if they get another chance, they get some training, they get a, you know, they get another chance. And that's about 40-plus percent of the homeless. And then there's what they call the will-nots, people who don't want to change. They're mostly drug addicts and alcoholics. And, again, that's about 40% of the homeless. But the ones you see on the street, for the most part, are the will-nots and the cannots. Because the have-nots usually find shelter. They might live with friends, which is still defined as homeless in California. So, you know, when you're looking at homeless people on the side of the road, those are typically people who are either mentally disabled, or drug addicts and alcoholics. There's, you know, if you boil it down to what we could do, you know, it is a long piece of work, and we came up with all kinds of ideas, but I could identify four legislative changes, or they could be done with citizens' initiatives that would go a long ways and really be kind of a prerequisite. If you don't make these changes, or at least most of them, you're going to have a hard time doing anything else. One is to lower the cost of housing, reform CEQA, stop urban containment, build more enabling infrastructure, lower the cost of housing by increasing the supply, by making it easier to build homes and not so expensive. Two, repeal what was the Lanterman-Petras Short Act, 1967. That's when they let everybody out. That's when they started to let everybody out of the mental hospitals. It culminated under Reagan. But what that act did was made it much harder to incarcerate people that are obviously mentally ill. So that has to be looked at. You know, maybe you don't want to get rid of it entirely, but that has to be looked at and revised. Three, go to court and challenge Jones versus the City of Los Angeles and redefine what permanent supportive housing means so that you don't keep getting backed further and further into a corner having to build more and more expensive shelter. And four, overturn Prop 47, which downgraded drug and property crimes, because the police have no leverage over the so-called will-nots among the homeless. If they commit a petty theft, which is up to $950 per day, under Prop 47, you can't even have accumulating crimes. In other words, if you steal no less than $950 a day worth of property and get what's the equivalent of a minor misdemeanor, they don't add up like they used to in court. So if you've offended 100 times, it doesn't give the courts the ability to do anything more than if you'd only offended once. I don't want to digress too much on that, but Prop 47 has to be overturned. Those four things would pave the way to do more to solve the homeless problem. And then, you know, you have a chance. You can start doing more cost-effective sheltering, maybe not in the best neighborhoods in Los Angeles. Why are they building homeless shelters in Venice Beach where homes cost $2 million on average?
It's just so crazy.
You know, so they could start doing some of that stuff, limiting the costs. But, you know, the big picture is why wouldn't, if you care about the homeless, and most people do, you know, why wouldn't you want to get all of them into adequate shelter versus just getting a fraction of them into these great shelters? That's not compassion.
Let's talk about one of these, and that was the issue of being able to confine the mentally ill. So Wiener, I call him Wiener, got one bill through. But as you mentioned in this piece, it may help getting five people off the streets.
That's right. Even the mayor of San Francisco, who's, you know, you would expect them to take the liberal maximizing human rights whenever it has to do with a so-called disadvantaged population, They were very cynical about how much potential that law had to do anything. I think, in fact, that 5% was a quote from Mayor Breed. So
it wasn't 5%. It was five people.
Yeah, it's not enough.
It was only in three counties. I did an op-ed on this. It was only three counties: of San Diego, L.A., and San Francisco. They gave three counties the ability to lock up a handful of people against their will because they're literally out of their minds. And that's the fundamental problem. You don't let somebody out of their mind have the decision-making power as to what's best for them.
The good news is the legislature's talking about it again.
Yeah.
But, you know, there are a lot of cases where the families themselves have the financial resources and the care enough to pay for treatment for, you know, their son or daughter or a brother or sister or whatever. There are homeless people, in other words, who have families that all they need is the legal authority to put them into treatment, and they'll pay for it. It won't even be a government expenditure, but you have to do something about the Lantern and Petra Short Act, or you don't have the power to do even those kinds of solutions with people who are obviously mentally ill.
Yeah, well, you know, we walked down State Street in Santa Barbara, and to some degree, you know, one of the downtown streets, Santa Luis Obispo is a little bit more of a square in Santa Luis Obispo. And even other towns like Santa Maria. I've lived in the Central Coast 51 years, and Lompoc just spent, I don't know, $500,000 to $1 million clearing out between 100 to 200 people that were living in the riverbed upwards of 15 years. And towns like Santa Maria now, there's homes, like let's say a home is available on the market, it's vacant. Homeless people will break in night after night after night and squat. And we didn't have those problems before. And as you've outlined, some of this is because they let people out of jail and or prisons early. But then there's the other thing is there's no penalties. The cops know. The cops know if they arrest them, they'll be back on the street the next day.
Yeah, the police refer to Prop 47 as catch and release.
Yes.
And that's downgrading the drug and property crimes. But as you just mentioned, Prop 57, which was another bad idea. You know, it had great intentions, but it's changed the character. Those two propositions changed the character of the homeless population. It allowed the so-called will-nots, who don't want to change, drug addicts, alcoholics, criminals, predators. It's harder to do anything about their behavior now, so it's creating a critical mass. You know, the number of homeless in California has gone up. The best numbers I could find, it's only up about 20% in the last 10 years. But the character of the homeless has changed. And the behavior of the homeless has changed because there aren't the deterrents in the law anymore.
That's right. They have nothing. They're not hiding anymore. They're squatting on Main Street. And they're committing crimes on Main Street because nobody's going to do anything about it. Ed, thank you so much for being with us. Value your work highly.
Well, thank you very much, Andy.
All right, Ed Ring, read the report at California Political Review. Again, California's homeless industrial complex, causes and solutions. Coming up next.